All right. This is Mike Latimore, Northland Capital. Thanks for joining or staying online. Just as a little context, again, this is the Artificial Intelligence Conference. On Friday, we had a lot of companies talking about artificial intelligence and customer engagement, customer service, and then specifically around speech analytics and text. Today, it's been more, you know, IoT, AI and IoT and video scenarios. And kind of following along that line, we have MicroVision next. We have Perry Mulligan, the CEO of MicroVision, and Sumit Sharma, the COO. So thanks, Perry and Sumit, for joining us today.
Good afternoon. Thanks, Mike. Thanks for having us.
Thank you. So just a couple questions here. I guess, you know, a lot of the companies that have sort of presented so far have, you know, talked about the ability of systems to interact through voice and video, leveraging AI, you know, virtual assistants, smart cameras, that sort of thing. You know, your tagline is about sort of bringing IO to AI. I guess, can you just sort of explain that sort of briefly and how it might relate to, you know, some of the topics we've touched on so far?
Yeah, thanks for that, Mike. You know, if you think of it today, for many consumers in the space, we recognize that AI represents this beautiful brain somewhere isolated in the cloud. And they have the ability to speak to it, and it answers some simple questions and performs some simple tasks. We're absolutely convinced that we can enhance that experience by providing sight, sound, gesture recognition, interactivity, and 3D sensing to that brain to help put things in context. So really making that brain much more aware of that environment from which you are posing those questions or interacting with it, and subsequently making it much easier for users to interact with this great tool, this great platform.
And that makes that sounds very attractive, actually. Makes a lot of sense. So you know, AI, broad topic, can mean a lot of different things. I guess, how would you sort of, when you talk about artificial intelligence, how do you define it? And you know, what technologies are in maybe in your products versus something that's in the cloud, let's say?
Yeah, let's treat that as a two-part question. I'll give you the layperson version of it first, and then mm-hmm. I'll ask Sumit to perhaps explain a little bit more with more granularity the subtleties of what's in our product. So if I start out, when we think of AI, we think of it in the broadest context, Mike. We absolutely believe that AI is the product. So I'm not advertising that we are an AI company. I'm not advertising that we are doing artificial intelligence in the most general sense. I think of it as this being a very ubiquitous high neural net compute engine that's available through the cloud. And we are providing at the peripheral compute and sensory inputs to it. And so I hope that puts it in context. For us, we consider AI the product. And now we're here about enhancing that, the ability of that wonderful ecosystem to interact with people more readily and easily, make it easier for people to interact with that platform. Relative to the question about what is unique or what is what level of machine intelligence, machine learning is in our products, I'll let Sumit give you a little bit of color on that.
So to add to what Perry said, if you think about AI, which is, you know, for right now in the market is Alexa, Google Assistant, Bixby, wide variety of services. These are all cloud computing services. Where is the edge computing now? If you think about our module, think of it more like a edge computer. An edge computer that is a IO point to the actual user. Before the cloud service can actually infer something, it needs more data, something specific about the situation, about the user that cannot be inferred by their Google searches or, you know, their purchasing habits by alone. It's something specific, a service that's needed instantaneously. So start thinking about this, the way we think about it, the way I kind of describe it internally as well is there is AI is the product. It is the cloud computing platform. It can do lots. It's going to have voice today. It can add more services, but the voice is the interaction point that it requires. So Amazon voice services, for example, that is just the beginning. The brain by itself in the cloud is going to expand with more services, more they can infer, but they need more input. And the input, of course, for humans is very simply visual and touch, right? So data structured any kind of way in any kind of instance allows them to infer more things about that user and actively provide services to them. So in our module, when we talk about, we don't use the word AI for our module, even though we have machine learning inside, because it's very specific to what the sensor is doing, what the interaction is. We're adapting the user experience to get very specific user data and allowing the AI to infer from that. So it's almost like, you know, it's taking the load that would be required to take raw user data, supply it to the cloud, churn through millions of data points, parse all that through, and then provide a service, is to have a subset of machine learning, or let's call it machine intelligence, embedded inside our module that actively allows the AI to adapt the service.
Yep.
That put it in context for you, Mike?
For sure. Yeah, that's very great. That's very good. So then I guess just to make it even maybe more clear, what would you say your machine learning technology, which is in your sensors, you know, like what would that do specifically versus what, you know, would occur in the cloud? Like what are some of the things that maybe your sensors, you know, take off the cloud load, let's say?
So again, I'll give you the layperson's version of that. Sumit can augment it with perhaps some of the more technical nuances. In the simplest of terms, when we think of what we can provide at the sensor, we have to first start off with the understanding, Mike, that we're coming from the solution with a wonderful advantage.
Mm-hmm.
Our LiDAR capabilities has a point cloud density that just makes it very easy for us to do things like object recognition, for us to do things like predictive travel, to understand what motion looks like through the field that we see it happening, so we can apply machine learning from a predictive perspective. So we can do these, what we think are relatively low power, simple analytics at the device, instead of, as Smith points out, sending massive amounts of data to the AI network. And that's as relevant mm-hmm. whether we're dealing with AI that exists in a cloud or whether you're dealing with the fusion of sensors in an automotive environment, right?
Right,
we're
right.
simply combining the characteristics of our device in a way that allows us to provide this very near messaging, very near-term messaging. It provides a latency advantage that we think is a pretty interesting perspective. And maybe I'll let Sumit just expand a little bit to explain why that it's almost counterintuitive. Right? With more data, why is it easier to do this than it would be if you had less data?
Well, if you think mm-hmm. about just elaborate what Perry said, think about the massive amount of data that we actually have inside our silicon. That data, we could infer quite a lot with enough machine intelligence, just the right amount, not, you know, ball the ocean kind of thing. We're not solving the entire problem, but we can infer mm-hmm. things in milliseconds or tens of milliseconds. Where you can imagine just transporting the data to the cloud would be hundreds of milliseconds or seconds, right? So in the case of, yes, that may not be relevant to lots of folks, as in our IoT products, except the interaction point for IoT product is not a capacitive touch LCD. Those form factors users do not want in their homes, right? This allows them to interact with a point and the services are adapting on the fly. In the case of our consumer LiDAR, it's inferring things about space management, right? But in all of them, the common theme is in the edge computer, which is our module, our edge computing, we infer things that are very, very important, we believe, to the AI to provide a more streamlined service at a faster pace. Of course, the raw data mm-hmm. that's inside there can certainly transport if they require it. But in all cases, you know, that is a backup. That is not, you know, the primary thing is low latency. Users want this magical feel. Even though the AI is in the cloud, they want it as if it's present right there.
Mm-hmm. In terms of the processing of the silicon, are there basically like, mini neural networks in there that are doing some of the processing, or what's the actual functionality that's going on there?
I think that depends on the product and, you know, not to get into too much detail, it all depends upon, in some cases, the kind of things we're doing. you know, how many tera ops are needed or how many giga ops are needed to do what we want to do. We can certainly use some, you know, commercial off-the-shelf silicon, right? But once we get to a certain point and we understand the mathematics, we incorporate that within our silicon. And that's, you know, adding GPUs and DSPs, that, of course, is, you know, we're a silicon company at the core, so we know how to do that. But it's not just putting machine intelligence for the sake of putting machine intelligence into our devices. It is what's actually relevant. You know, so this way, create a product that's lean, it's launchable, it's got the right price point, it doesn't have a whole lot of overhead, just the capabilities we need.
One of the attributes, Mike, and I don't want to take us down a path that, that you didn't want to go to today, but one of the attributes of our sensing product is the fact that it's got temporal and spatial resolution capabilities. It's so important for people to realize, you know, thinking of scanning a room, well, in most cases, the walls and the windows and the furniture are pretty static. We can now detect motion and clarify and focus our engine temporally and spatially on that motion. So when we talk about efficiencies, when Smith talks about sort of the data efficiency at the center, the edge compute at the center, at the peripheral in our sensor, you get this, you get the opinion or you get the perspective now that says, hey, guess what? We're well positioned to articulate what's happening temporally in that region at that time and sending that message to the central processor to say, heads up, you might want to be aware. And let me be illustrative. If I can do that in the display engine where I'm predicting what your finger is touching in an illuminated display, obviously there's no capacitive touch on the tabletop or the surface that you're projecting that image on. We're inferring that through time of flight and machine learning where we are predicting your finger landed. If that's relevant in simulating that interactive display, that capacitive touch display, at 70 miles an hour, do you think it's relevant to detect if the car beside you is going to infer in your lane, right? It's going to cross over. The same algorithm, the same sort of thought process or capability of this edge compute is required to do both. In a cost-effective, low-power way that we're describing.
So depending on the product vertical, right, the strategy changes, right? It depends upon what part of silicon you want to own, what somebody already has, right? If there's a 14-nanometer technology that can do this better, why would we do it? If the 14-nanometer technology is a $400 processor that, you know, even NVIDIA is not going to be able to reduce, right? But we can infer things, you know, it's all dependent on power and latency, right? That's the core of why this has to be more efficient. Yep. We will incorporate it and give that, the AI has got the benefit. Again, NVIDIA's got a great platform, but the AI is what's going to enable that entire platform. Same thing in our IoT products. People want, you know, a very, very fast display at a lower cost so they can deploy more.
Yep. Okay, got it. Makes sense. And in terms of understanding gestures, you mentioned the thing, you know, time of flight and of the finger moving and so forth. Is there some level of accuracy that needs to be there before it's, you know, sort of easy to use and widely reliable? I mean, it almost makes me think of like speech recognition. You know, once you get to a certain level of accuracy, speech recognition software becomes valuable. Like here, what level of accuracy do you need? And you know, are we there yet?
I think, let me start off slightly and I'll get to the question in a second, right? I have to give some context. Think about the 50,000 plus skills that are on Alexa right now. If you were to put them in some sort of buckets, you'll find that some of them, voice only is good enough. Some of them, voice for display is good enough. Some of them, voice, display plus touch is good enough. Some of them, voice, display, touch plus gesture is required, right? There's a spectrum. It's not like all of them require it. So let's, you know, that's context. That's important, right? Over the weekend, I was reading something about Amazon Business, right? Amazon Business is a bigger opportunity. It's a $10 billion business they've created in 4 years. So it's outpacing all their other businesses. The point was, this is different interaction points, not what I do with my Alexa at home. These are different kinds of features will be needed, right? And gestures are not, you know, just hand gestures. Lots of things can be called gestures, right? Robots can do gestures. Lots of things could be done, right? So we need enough of machine learning inside so we can adapt as their platform adapts, right? So the point I'm making is like the skills are going to keep growing, and that's just Alexa. So you can imagine the actions in Google Assistant and other platforms will grow. You need something developed so you don't have to every year refresh that, right? And the machine learning allows us to adapt to the situation, to the very specific business that our customers may want to attend to. So the accuracy is good enough. I mean, we can demonstrate that. I think that's not the case. The case is what is the application they want to do? And is the platform we're creating scalable?
I think, Mike, if you look at the last web video we put on our website, it sort of indicates the speed and latency of responsiveness to touch. By the time you come to CES this year, I think you will see, again, what will approach seamless interaction between the human and the projection system, right? So we believe we have that that nut cracked, if you would. That's not something that's in us hyper.
Okay, great. Yeah, I mean, on that video you posted on your website recently, I mean, can you just talk a little bit more about that? I mean, it seems like that's something that, you know, holds a lot of potential for you. You know, maybe talk a little bit about the technology you're offering there versus the smart speaker itself versus the cloud service.
Well, at the simplest point, again, I think what we're trying to illustrate is there are, you know, what's the smart speaker market today? I think 40, 50 million units deployed. Mm-hmm. Obviously, people have found use and application for voice-activated smart speakers. Mm-hmm. So what we're showing, though, is that the ability to do multi-stage transactions, multi-level transactions, are so much more readily and easily accomplished if you have the ability for touch and display combined with voice.
Yep.
So you know, one of the testaments, I think one of the tests we try to do is, you know, if you're a busy person, can you order $100 worth of groceries in 4 minutes? Can you select a multidimensional menu item quickly, right? And it's not a question of whether or not these of themselves are benchmarks or bellwethers. They just illustrate how much simpler it is to accomplish. You know, I've had friends comment that while they own all of the voice-activated technologies, they'd be worried about ordering an Uber without being able to visually see on the map where it's going, right? The notion of purchasing something without visually seeing that the platform has got the quantity correct, that the resultant value is correct, that the MOQ is correct. You know, these things just become a much more natural experience for us, and I think that's why we come back to saying it's not about displacing a solution. It's about enabling the user to interact more easily, because we know if it's easier for them to interact, it becomes easier to transact. And that's how our customers are going to make money.
Yep.
To add slightly more to that is display, capacitive touch displays, you know, Amazon Show was launched, right? There is products that are out there, but yet none of them are taking off as much as a smart speaker by themselves. As Perry mentioned, 40 to 50 million approximately so far install base. And a very small of them are display. So there's a fundamental issue with the demographic, how they want to interact with the information. The point was that nobody wants a computer in their homes or in their offices with a camera that's monitoring. That's not what they want. They want a technology that's a disappearing display with all the benefits. So we're not displacing anything because nothing exists. There's no 20-inch capacitor display monitor product out there. We're not displacing anything. This is a completely brand new sector because the other one has plateaued. People do not want to actually get on it.
No, that makes sense. So, you know, I mean, is the implication by putting this video out, and, you know, obviously the very attractive use case here, I mean, should we assume that sort of one of the main development projects you're working on leads to a product like this next year? I mean, you have a lot of different use cases, you know, obviously that your products can be used for, but is this like the one that's probably the biggest one for next year?
Again, one of the things we said several earnings calls ago was that we were focused on AI platform owners. And the advantage or disadvantage of that, Mike, as you know, is there's only a handful of them in the world. And we're talking to all of them. about these types of applications and using these types of demos to allow them to help monetize their huge investments. You know, if we think of AI, as I described it earlier, this in the neural net in the cloud, as being a $19 billion spend this year for companies, growing to over $50 billion by 2021, the ability to monetize that investment is absolutely critical to these large OEMs. And we think that it's sort of self-evident that the demos that we're doing and the product development we're talking of enables that them to monetize that.
I think if you go as far back as CES 2017, right, we've actually been very public about, you know, the direction, how the interaction would work out, right? This is sort of just showing the condensed version of it. You know, think about it more as we have different partnerships, everybody will have their own desire of how they want AI to be deployed out, right? What we're showing there is exactly how anybody would monetize that, right? These are applications that we've talked about, so, you know, but it becomes very easy for somebody to infer, right, infer from this video that directionally what kind of transaction, what kind of interaction, human interaction is needed that has been requested, and if that would be something valuable, right? So I think, you know, Taco Time is one of my favorite ones, right? I think for a while that I've talked about it for a long time publicly and privately. But it's not just, you know, it's not fantasy, right? It was actually something that most folks would think that when you're on the fly, it's a very simple thing, but that whole transaction takes less than, the entire script is slow because we're explaining things, right? But if you did it privately, it moves fast. Mm-hmm. And you can go from anywhere from $100 to $200 worth of orders without ever engaging, logging on to anything, right? It is on the fly. So you can infer that, yeah, of course, that's kind of applications and use cases that will actually enable this market.
Yeah, and you know, you'll probably just order more too if it's easier to do. So, higher
That's
ticket
right.
price per use. Yeah,
that's right.
Right before you presented, we had iRobot on, and you know they're kind of like almost like a little mini autonomous car now. I mean, I assume those are. I mean, there's a lot of use cases, right? And the one that's maybe most visible is the smart speaker one, but. In terms of, you know, some more smart home technologies like, I don't know, these kind of consumer robots or, you know, different smart kind of, you know, gesture sensing technologies in a home security scenario. Like, how do you think about those opportunities, you know, beyond the smart speaker?
Maybe if I could, you know, sometimes, Mike, you know, we're always challenged to try to explain it to our families. What the heck do we do?
Mm-hmm.
And the last time I was asked to explain this, I said, you know, think of our grandmother Nan coming to visit, and we tell the AI platform that Nanny's in the house, and it knows where the couch is, and it knows where the floor is, and it knows what the room looks like, and if Nanny's having a snooze on the couch in the afternoon, it's okay because sometimes she does that. But if Nanny's lying on the floor, maybe it might want to call her name or call 911. So that spatial awareness, that whole context of being able to put environmentally a situation into perspective is sort of the difference between taking a picture of a room and standing at the doorway of the room. Your awareness of what's going on is very, very...
But to add, you know, the IoT, I think the question was, you know, interactive projection. Well, in the robotics, I think... lots of different applications. Certainly, you could have the interactive projection, right? But primarily, I think what Perry's talking about is our, you know, what we call the consumer LiDAR product. So, for example, you know, iRobot wants to do, you know, mapping services, cloud mapping services, right? You know, you need some sort of sensor, very low compute threshold on the edge, some module, right? Our consumer LiDAR products are for those kind of services. The specific application that Perry talked about, you know, certainly we've, you know, really thought through it internally, right? You could not enable that with a camera module. You could not enable that just primarily with interactive projection, but our consumer LiDAR product, which is, again, take the display away, just the LiDAR portion of it, it enables that robot to do something. So these modules, what iRobot is making is a consumer product, right? We are a module supplier, so we enable them to do more without having to use a i7 processor to take a lot of the information and locally have to do it. So their overall system could be smarter with a potential lower cost. So
right.
That's the philosophy behind, you know, all the different verticals.
I think at the end of the day, the hypothesis we're offering is that we believe that our technology will offer performance that is equal to or better at a lower compute, at a lower cost, right? So while I fully understand there's many different competing solutions available, that's what we think we can bring with our consumer LiDAR solution.
Yep. Great. Good. And then I guess just last question would be, you know, if you go back several years now, there was some component costs that were high cost, like green lasers. Are there any sort of components, you know, in the supply chain that, you know, that are of costs that are a little bit too high for a specific use case? Or do you feel like the supply chain is, and the components that you need are sort of readily available?
Mike, I'll just sort of remind folks that I only spent 30 years in supply chain and operations. So anything above zero is too expensive, and infinity is the quantity I want. Right. Having said that, and we put that aside for a second, you know, we've got this wonderful opportunity here that says we're in the right place in the right time. Our technology leverages standard industry processes, standard industry technologies. We're dealing with world-class suppliers that have the ability to ramp as we see fit. And you know, and I know that when we're talking to these large platform owners, you don't end up talking in six figures worth of volumes. You talk seven figure, eight figure kinds of volumes, because that's how they define success. And one of the advantages, and one of the things I'm absolutely pleased to remind folks of, Sumit's been with us now coming up on 3 years. And in that period of time, he's managed to transform what was sort of the grad shop mentality of operations within our company. It's something that passes the scrutiny of these world-class OEMs. And if we hadn't been able to pass that scrutiny, we wouldn't be at the levels of conversations we're having today. So we're primed and ready to go.
Yeah. Awesome. That's great to hear. Good. Well, that covered the main highlights I had. I mean, anything else, Perry or Sumit, that is worth touching on real quicker?
I really appreciated you taking the time and giving us the opportunity to speak with you and your audience today, Mike. We're excited about where the company is positioned. We're excited about the future that we're facing. We respect that we came from a long history of display, and we really believe that the laser beam scanning technology core that we have will allow us to leverage the LiDAR side of that equation well into the future. So thanks again for the time. Really appreciate
it. Very good. Thanks, Barry. Thanks, Sumit. Thanks, everybody, for being online. And if you want to just stay on, we'll move to the next company here. But again, thanks, Barry and Sumit.
Thank you.
So, all right. Thanks. Have a good afternoon. So at 3, we'll have the CEO and CFO of Veritone present. So just a couple minutes here.